Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, it's just Jeff, just me. But I'm talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, though, so it can't be all bad. Oh yeah, I don't have the music files to insert here, so it's just me doing weird sounds. Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Jeff Randall. Unfortunately, Matt can't be joining me today. He is in Alaska currently and unable to watch Ant-Man and the Wasp and talk about it immediately. But I'm here and, well, I'm excited about it. So let's get right to it. First off, I want to say that this movie, in a non-spoiler fashion, is worth seeing. It is a good, solid entry into the Marvel canon, the MCU, and honestly, after the blunt force trauma that was Infinity War, Marvel fans needed this. Marvel fans needed something a little softer, a little lighter, cleanse the palate, so to speak. Something funnier, not as high stakes. It's not without its share of seriousness, and it certainly has very emotional moments, but it's a lot easier to digest than that trauma that Infinity War laid down on us. Now, continuing in the non-spoiler realm, right now the movie is sitting at 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got an average rating of 7 out of 10, which is about what I would give it. 7.5, maybe 8 out of 10 is where I would place it. It's a really solid entry. It's not my favorite, though. It's not my favorite of the MCU. It's not my favorite with, starring Paul Rudd. Not my favorite involving Paul Rudd. Not my favorite team up. It's still good, though. I would say it's the better of the two Ant-Man movies, likely. Mostly because it doesn't seem to follow the standard bad guy gets technology, bad guy does bad thing, bad guy wants to continue doing bad things. It's a bit more complex than that. The movie's tracking to open at about $80 to $90 million over the weekend, which is solid considering how the first one opened and kind of how the solo movies are tracking, where it's not the biggest and most stellar of heroes. He may be the biggest, like, physically, but, like, big name, not so much. So it's going to be a solid opening weekend for a solid movie. I wouldn't say that it's going to stay in first place too terribly long. It's certainly not going to have the legs that Infinity War has, even though most of the characters in it have 6. It's a terrible joke. It's terrible. Anyway, still trying to stay in non-spoiler territory. Evangeline Lilly is phenomenal, as always. She finally gets to have her kick-ass role, literally and figuratively. Michael Douglas gets to have actually emotionally gripping scenes where he's not just telling the backstory. He's not just expositioning. He gets to do things again, finally. Surprise favorite for me, honestly, out of Bill Foster, Lawrence Fishburne's character. I'm not going to say why, just that he was a surprising favorite for me. And as always in the Marvel movies, the little kids steal the show, so Cassie Lang was just phenomenal. You really want to see her in future movies, like, 5-10 years down the road, you want her to become the hero stature that she becomes in the comics. Like, I want her to be that size-changing hero. Anyway, I think that's about all I can do for non-spoiler, since I'm starting to get into individual characters and actors. This is definitely one to see, though. If you're on the fence about it, go see it. Don't expect it to be as soul-crushing as Infinity War. It's gonna be fun, it's gonna be funny, and it's it's going to feel about the same as the first one. Just fewer montages. fewer overall montages. So, with that, I'm going to go ahead into spoiler territory. So, spoiler alert in 3, 2, 1. This is usually where I would yell something, and I can't find anything to yell that's, like, truly surprising, other than it's non-standard. There's no, like, standard antagonist. There's no standard villain. There's no, you know, there's nobody with this great overarching plot to destroy the world. The main villain, honestly, is a guy who is a crime boss. Like, let's see. Walton Goggins plays Sonny Birch, and he's a crime boss, basically, who really just wants to get Hank Pym's technology, get his lab so that he can sell it to somebody and make a bunch of money. And it's not even that he wants to use it. He just wants to sell it to somebody. And he knows that Hank is opening the quantum realm and is attempting to, you know, find his wife in there. This guy may not know that he wants to find his wife, but he definitely knows that Hank Pym wants to open the quantum realm, and that's going to open so many possibilities. And he knows that he can get a lot of money from that. And that's really the ultimate bad that he's doing, is trying to steal from this guy and being a dick to do it. And everyone other than that, like the Randall Park's character, Jimmy Woo, the FBI agent, is not actually a bad guy. He's an antagonist, but he's not a bad guy. He's following the law and doing his part for just what he considers justice. And, you know, while the Sokovia Accords, you know, are not the best thing in the world for the heroes, it's part of the law right now. And that's what that guy is trying to do. Other antagonists, you know, the main one being Ava Ghost. She's not actually just being bad for the sake of being bad. She's trying to save herself. She's basically being ripped apart because her father did a stupid thing trying to get the quantum realm open in her past. And she's been living with this agonizing pain the entire time and is phasing in and out of reality, which is a very, very heartbreaking thing to watch, but is also beautiful to see as far as the visual effects go, because every time she's phasing in and out and around things, you can see little traces of possibilities, so to speak, where like this is going to be her next face, or that could be her next face. She's trying to dodge one way or the other. Like, she's thinking about different ways that she needs to get out of a certain situation, and you can see all the ways that she would dodge, and there's all the possibilities and all the different states that she could be in. And then, you know, she picks whatever particular way she's going. It's a gorgeous thing to see, and I would recommend seeing it in 3D because of that. I didn't see it in 3D, but I saw it in GDX, the giant digital experience, so that was where I got it. I'm probably going to see it again for the 3D, just to see how beautiful it can get. As far as the other surprise role, surprise sort of antagonist, Lawrence Fishburne's character, Dr. Bill Foster, was this incredible, out of nowhere, complex character where he was slighted by Hank Pym in the past and kind of held that little bit of a grudge against him for that. But he didn't take that to heart as like, this is why I need to be a bad guy. He was just somebody who had a different viewpoint and decided to try to help people in his way. And he was trying to help Ava because he's the best, or he heard about it, and he figured he was the best person to try to help that sort of person because he had the most experience with Quantum Realm and Hank Pym stuff after Hank Pym went off the rails. And so he tries to help Ava by not really even doing bad things. He's helping someone who doesn't necessarily have all of their pieces together. And he's telling her, you know, if you do this, I'm not going to help you. If you cross this line of kidnapping this little girl, I'm not going to help you. And, you know, he stands by those morals. And while he may understand that, yes, this lady is doing some bad things, he still wants to help her because he sees she just needs some help. And that's beautiful. And for that complexity, and like, he's got all of these layers of, I want to be a good guy, I want to help people, I don't want to do the bad thing, but she's a bad person, sort of, but I think that she can be saved if I can just get through to her and help her with these things. And she needs help. She's a person in need and obviously a broken person. So if I can fix this one thing, that might put her back together. But I still need to do the good thing. I still kind of want to be the hero, but I still really hate Hank Pym because he's such a dick. Like, all of these layers of Lawrence Fishburne's Bill Foster was just incredible to see and really just made my jaw drop while I was in the theater. So that is pretty much all of the antagonists. You've got the FBI who are just doing their job, you know, trying to enforce the unenforceable, really, Sokovia Accords. You've got Sonny Birch, who's just a crime boss, effectively. Ava, who's trying to help herself. And Bill Foster, who's trying to keep Ava on a good path. Those are your major antagonists. Nobody really is, like, the big villain you gotta stop. And then, with Bill Foster having this connection to Ava and wanting to help, he's also got that connection to Dr. Hank Pym and really wins the moral argument with Hank Pym. Like, he gets Hank Pym to understand, like, this girl is in need of our help. She's like, we're the only one that can help her and she's in pain. And Hank Pym says, as soon as I get back with Janet, I will help you find a cure for her condition. It's so great that they can come to that understanding and have that kind of turnaround moment of, God, maybe I was being a dick to everybody. And that's the real overarching story here, is connection from everybody from Hank's past is coming back, literally and figuratively. Everybody from Hank's past is having an effect on his life, and it's showing that the effects of what we do echo throughout our lives and into the future. And Hank is learning at an older age that maybe he wasn't the best person to everybody. So other major through lines for this are Scott Lang becoming Ant-Man again after having not been Ant-Man for 2 years after the events of Civil War, coming back into the fold with Hope, and kind of seeing how Hope has developed into the hero that she is, sort of on the back end, on the run, underground. She's become a badass. Evangeline Lilly plays this perfectly. She is just an outright badass. And Paul Rudd's Scott Lang interpretation of, like, being cooped up around the house for 2 solid years is phenomenal. It's a wonder he's not more crazy. He takes it well in stride, though, which is kind of what we expect from Scott Lang. Like, oh, yep, I've been in prison. I know how this goes. 2 years, yeah. At least I get to see my daughter and play games with her around the house, which is adorable. And they establish early in the movie what the major stakes time frame is that whenever Scott is getting mixed back up with Hope and Hank, that he's got just a few days before his ankle bracelet comes off and he's got to be back at home to kind of just be there for the FBI so that he can get that ankle bracelet taken off officially for good. And that kind of says, like, everything that's here, everything that's within this movie happens within a couple of days, and based on the mid-credits scene, happens before the events of Infinity War. And, you know, it just kind of establishes that in the timeline. You know, it has been 2 years since Civil War, and it is at least a little bit before Infinity War, because they're after they finish with Scott's major story, and they go to the whole mid-credit scene, which I don't want to talk about yet. When they go to the whole mid-credit scene, it could have been any length of time in between that. It's kind of understood that it's like, it seems like it should have been a couple of weeks. It might have been months, because his tunnel, his quantum tunnel, I guess they called it, his quantum tunnel, he wanted a smaller version of it. And so they fit it into the back of the van, and they were able to shrink that down. So I guess, or make that into a smaller version of itself. So either he used his PIM particle shrinking technology to squeeze it into the back of the van, or he just built it smaller with Janet's help. So that could have taken, you know, several months. Anyway, so Scott and his tale, really, Scott is just kind of thrown along for this ride, trying to get everybody helped before he needs to get back to home. And it's not his story, really. It's not his story anymore. He's just kind of thrown into it, kind of the same way that he was in the first one. But in the first one, he was more recruited, and now he feels more like he's called to help. He feels the hero pull in him, pulling him to help these people that he loves. So he does come to the rescue, breaking them out of prison, like they broke him out, or like Hank broke him out, rather. They were in the holding cell, and everybody got a suit, some sort of hat and glasses, which he calls out as, like, it was a very meta comment. He's like, this is not a disguise. It looks like us going to a ball game, which is obviously a dig at every other incognito Marvel person throughout all of the movies, having just a nondescript ball cap and sunglasses, like aviators, like that's the costume. And then they were obviously spotted, because just a few minutes later, the FBI shows up with, you know, security having seen them. And so really, this is mostly a Hope Van Dyne hero story, where she's being the hero, and it's kind of them coming into an understanding of, like, we do need to do this together if we're going to succeed, but she's a badass on her own, but it seems like she's having to understand that she's not able to do everything. She can't be everywhere all at once, so if the two of them work together, he's still good at what he does, and she's a badass, so they're going to get a few things done, and they show that in their final, I guess, showdown fight with Ava, where they're able to kind of team up and bring her down. Really, it's more of just like stun her long enough to let Janet kind of walk up and see this woman in pain and say, oh, I know your pain. Use my healing hands to fix it. She's become a cleric in her time in the quantum realm. And she explained it as, you know, time in there changes you. She's not the same person. It's evolution almost. So she's developed some way to harness quantum energy and utilize that to heal people who have been affected by it, which is really nice of her. And especially to just so willingly help someone who, you know, is in so much pain. Like, she's still a hero. She's still the Wasp, the original Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. So as far as our other protagonists, Michael Pena got his chatterbox sequences again. This time it was all at once, not really so much a part of the story as it was a callback to the first one. It seems like Peyton Reed, the director, understood. Everybody liked Michael Pena's sequences where he was kind of chattering on, prattling on, and everybody was speaking the way that he speaks in his retellings of the world. And so because everybody liked that, let's go ahead and just redo some of that. And it honestly had no bearing on the rest of the story at all, but was still really fun to watch. That there was some much needed levity to the seriousness of the situation that he was in, getting interrogated by the crime boss. And then you know, the other characters within it, Dave and Kurt, played by T.I. and David Dasmalchian, you know, they didn't really get to do much other than just be fun backup. They weren't necessarily, I don't want to say useful, but they weren't necessarily useful in as big a capacity as they were the first movie. They were kind of a reminder of like, hey, this movie is fun and these characters are fun too, and we like all of the interactions that they have, so let's have them all have fun again. That's really all it was. So I guess that's really all I wanted to speak on as far as characters. Now as far as plot, story, the overall pacing of the movie was a little, it's a standard team-up movie, basically. This was a team-up movie. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp teaming up, also Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne coming back, and Bill Foster being involved, and then, you know, and kind of Ava with Bill Foster. I mean, it was a team-up in a bunch of different ways, where, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp would not have teamed up with Ava, but they did team up with Hank Pym, who sort of was going to team up with Bill Foster. He definitely was going to team up with Janet Van Dyne. Janet was the one that kind of cured Ava, and Bill Foster was helping her before, so kind of by extension did team up with Ant-Man and the Wasp. Like, it's complex, and I love that. The story, though, the pacing was slow in the beginning, where they were getting everybody up to speed on what's going on before they really threw us into the story. And then we were in it at warp speed, about as the way that Paul Rudd felt, or about the way that Scott Lang felt. And he had only a few days to get everything done and get back to home. And that's kind of how it felt, is they were going, warp speed, let's go, we gotta get him home. And it suited the movie, and it felt similar to the first movie, as far as, like, things have to be done, we have to hit these beats, let's go. But it also felt a little bit chaotic. Kind of from the middle, no, right after about Act 1, it felt like chaos. And it felt like these people were just kind of reacting to everything and trying to make it with all of this bad happening around them, which kind of felt like the world post Sokovia Accords. You know, it's all chaos and they're just trying to make what they can happen. So as far as pacing, it's a little slow and then picks up to crazy speeds. And then after it's all done, it seems like everybody's happy, except that at the end, Scott gets stuck in the quantum realm, and Janet, Hank, and Hope all turn to ash, and I was left with my mouth agape in the theater. All three of them are gone, and Scott's just calling out for help on the speaker. Oh, Thanos, you son of a bitch. And I'm, you know, I want to know what happened to Bill Foster with, you know, did he turn to ash? I want to know what happened to Cassie. Like, don't leave her alone. Please, dear God, don't leave her alone. Like, let Paxton and Maggie, or at least one of them, be okay. You know, what happened to Luis and Dave and Kurt? Like, what happened to all of our people? Is Ava all right? Like, I find myself caring about that character. Like, is she okay? Is she going to come back and be, you know, helpful in some way, because she was apparently a SHIELD operative? How are all of these people going to be okay in this world? Like, please help us. Someone help us. I mean, the ant is playing drums at the end to kind of like bring back the levity, but it doesn't save it. It doesn't save it at all. Captain Marvel, come help, please. Like, while this movie had a lot of levity and a lot of fun to it, it was still kind of serious in the story, still a little bit serious, and then right at the end, they just brought it all home, like, oh shit, Thanos did snap. He did get that hand, you know, together long enough to snap. Oh, that hurts. So story was good. It was different from your normal bad guy wants to do a bad thing. They were fighting over who got the right to help somebody that they love and cared about, either themselves or a long lost loved one. As far as the other big things in movies, the visuals were juxtaposed almost. There were two very contrasting views in this particular movie. There was the super cool, small, shrunken down views. Everything is big around you, and what does that world look like? So that was really visually interesting. And Ava, Ghost, her power and how they were trying to help her with it, like, that looked really cool visually, really awesome. When Hank Pym went down into the quantum realm to go get Janet, that area was crazy. It was like Doctor Strange going through all of the realms and all of the dimensions and seeing how many dimensions there are. Like when he saw the dark dimension, it was like that level of crazy, awesome, trippy. And and he got to play with some water bears. So visually, it was stellar. Crazy to see. It warrants going into 3D just so that you can get that insane feeling from it and see all of those visuals. But those were offset by all the mundane day-to-day, being stuck in house arrest kind of thing that Scott Lang had to deal with. And it really made those parts feel just a little more on the boring side and more dull by comparison. And when he grew large, he did it up big. he had a lot of fun with that part as well. And he really had a good spread of like going small when going small would help, and being thrown into bigger sizes kind of not by his choice, by I don't want to call it a plot device so much as the weird tech issue that he was having with his suit, where he would occasionally just be thrown to large or half size. But that half size got some good laughs in the school because he looked like a 5-year-old. Sound design. They brought back the original song from the first movie, the heist song. It sort of fit with the theme here. It didn't feel so much like a heist movie this time around, so the heist feel of the Ant-Man song just didn't really stick so much. They modified it and it kind of stuck, but it was still a little weird. It might have been my theater though, where I had an issue with sound, because it felt like all of the sound was coming through, like even when they didn't have helmets on, it sounded like they were coming through helmets. So it might have been an issue that I had with the sound design or the sound delivery system in my theater. But sound design has never really been the MCU's strong point. So meh, whatever, they get a star. You get a star for putting sound in the movie again. Now, going forward, we've got Janet, Hank, and Hope have all turned to ash. So, what are they going to do when it comes time to go into Avengers 4? We've seen pictures of Scott Lang on set filming Avengers 4. So he obviously gets out of the quantum realm, but like, come on, man, like, give me some kind of clue as to who's going to help him. Who's going to save him? Who's going to get him out of there? And something that, that Janet said kind of stuck with me when he was going in, right before he was going in, she said, don't get stuck in a time vortex, because that's a bad thing. That makes me think that they're kind of pushing us into that direction for time travel. Like, maybe Scott Lang gets caught in a time vortex or some sort and gets pushed out into a different time and has to you know, has to save somebody in some way for some reason, or, you know, does something to bring all of our heroes to the present. I'm not sure. Or maybe he just gets stuck for a really long time and then pops out later. I don't know. I can't say. I'm not a writer. Really looking forward to whenever Matt gets back so we can have a good solid discussion on this rather than just me talking at everyone. But really overall, I like this movie. I enjoyed it. I do want to see it again. I feel like I might have missed some things because I was focused on, you know, sound and kind of feeling out the story and being entertained at the same time. I'd like to go super analytical. I'm going to go with analytical. That's because then I can analyze a list. It's analytical. Anyway, so definitely worth seeing, probably worth seeing again. I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, so we are the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. If you want to hit us up with your feedback on this film, we will talk about it in a future feedback episode. You can send us an email at mcucast@gmail.com. You can catch all of our stuff on mcucast.com. We're at facebook.com/mcucast, mcucast on Twitter. If you want to send a couple of bucks our way and help us out to help support the cast, you can go to patreon.com/mcucast. Pretty much everywhere we are mcucast. Also, you can call us and leave a voicemail at 573-CAST-MCU. That's 573-CAST-MCU. And we will play your voicemail back on the air and discuss what you discuss. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to all the feedback and everything. Go see Ant-Man. If you listened to all of this and haven't, I don't know why. You're doing a bad thing. Hopefully I didn't get too crazy about it. And yeah, let me know what you think, guys. Until next time, true believers.